with my fellow podcasters.
It's Aretha.
I'm high.
That was Day.
And this is Myra.
And we are here with an incredible guest for you all today, Justin Ward of Divest SPD. Say hi, Justin.
Hello.
We'll put in some reverb on that.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, Justin is the face creator. Well, were you anonymous for a while running Divest SPD?
Not really. I was always giving interviews under my real name.
Work has been super, super helpful. I remember whenever I'm like scrambling for statistics, I'm like, hold up. I know exactly where to go to find this information. And that is such a resource for organizers and community in Seattle, because we get gaslit left and fucking right by all of the media. And to have, knowing that the source, the information that you're putting out is credible, you're doing so much work to make sure that we have this readily available, is just such a resource. So thank you for all of that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, the trick is, all you have to do is, if you want to find out something about the cops, like you run into a cop like on the street who gives you some shits, you go to Twitter, you type in @DivestSPD in the search engine, and you type in the cop's name. You can find out, like, see if we have a thread about him. If that doesn't work, you go to spd.watch, and you can look up. We have this handy little tool that we created in conjunction with our friends at Tech Block Seattle. You can look up any cop, and then you can find out how many disciplinary investigations they've had since 2014.
Damn.
We're planning on adding new things like settlement information, all that good stuff, and documents. So, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I love that you're kind of a degen and also a very serious person. Kind of like Aretha.
What?
Have you gotten offers for your site?
For my site?
I guarantee it's coming.
What, you mean for my Twitter account?
It's a whole Divest
The
SPD
whole thing, my whole brand,
entity.
Like a buyout. Yes. No, I mean, I don't know.
Can't you guys see like Seattle Foundation being like, listen, enough.
Sometimes
things get bought out all the time to be put to bed.
Yeah, so you don't compete with them or, yeah.
I will never sell out. That is something I vow, because, like, I actually don't give a shit about money. I mean, I'm not saying that to be like, like I'm insane or anything. I don't know. It's like, what good is stuff? Like,
10 million.
Shut up. No.
Are you taking it for 10 mil?
Well, I mean, is it contingent on me?
$500 million.
Is it contingent on me retiring from the game of fucking with cops? Or can I just sell you like my account? I'll sell the account and take the 10 million and build a whole
something
organization.
Better?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No. It's definitely. Like a 10 million and you're retired.
It's hush money.
No, never.
Nice.
500 never. Million to shut
that?
Up.
You hear that here first.
Oh, man.
$500 million.
Yeah, maybe I'd sell out for 500 million. I don't know.
People are wondering, where did your obsession with cops come from?
I mean, like, part of it was just the experience, because, I mean, I actually had, I didn't really know anything. People would be very surprised, but I knew very little about the police before 2020. Like, everything that I know now is stuff that I learned in the past 3 years, pretty much. You know, I knew a little bit. I had a passing familiarity with the criminal punishment system. It's like I was in campaigns in the death penalty. You know, worked around drug policy with a lot of activists in college. And then, you know, I also read some books, like, you know, I read The New Jim Crow. But I didn't really know, like, anything about the police, though. And actually, I had this vague notion that the Seattle police were bad just because I knew there was a consent decree. Mm-hmm. I knew, you know, just all this stuff that kind of had, like, filtered into, like, you know, I knew all the names of, like, all the different people who got killed, you know, over the past, but I didn't know anything about the police. And then that experience of the George Floyd uprising, it just like, it brought everything into so much relief. Just like, there's no propaganda we can make that could be better than just them being themselves, like, and just unloading on us. And like, so that really had a, you know, I was already pretty fucking radical, but that radicalized me in the abolitionist space. That made me feel more radical, more, it made me like more conscious that this is like a leftist issue.
One thing that I want to ask, Justin, because like it's super cool that you got like more radicalized during 2020 and found like such a lane to stay in and have like stuck with in the movement. But like it seemed like there were so many people who were out in the streets and who were involved and then maybe didn't find like a political home or a way to stay connected. Mm-hmm. In practical terms, like what was it like for you during that time when you were building out more of that analysis? Like who were the people that provided support for you? What were the spaces and what are the things that like gave you whatever you needed to stay involved? And like maybe what would you say to encourage more people to like come back into it?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good thing to bring up because, I mean, it is kind of like the core question about, like how the movement, just, like, the trajectory of it and, like, how it didn't really, like, sustain so much. And, too, and I think I always think about this, too, like, just, like, the timeline of how, like, the wave sort of crested, right? And, you know, I would say maybe like the final phases of it, you know, were like in early 2021, you know. And but then I think about like the broader picture and I think about like from just like struggle to struggle to struggle. I mean, it does, you know, the movement goes up and down like this. You know, it's like in so much of what happened in 2020 was rooted in this infrastructure, which isn't like a very broad infrastructure, very deep infrastructure, but it is like a skeleton of something that started like taking shape in these past movements with Block the Bunker and no New Youth Jail. So it's like from movement to movement, from like just surge and struggle, it's like there is some like small continuity there, and that's like I think to you know, it was very disappointing with Nikita and NTK, the loss there, because and that was basically because the pendulums like swung so quickly, just after the election, just like
the fear mongering went back to like a 10.
Yeah, yeah, and just like every single one of those like council members that we got to commit to defunding, they all flip flopped instantly. You know,
running because they talk about standing for workers. They talk about how they care about people of color and communities of color and all the shit. And then they're like, these are the 1,001 reasons why none of this makes sense to do right now. Yeah. Sorry, I just can't do it. I just can't. And you're just
we need another study. We need 3 or 4 more studies. And then we have to have a study of the study. And, you know, then we have to do a meta-analysis. This is just science. You know, yeah. That's how it's done.
We know that it's difficult. Like, obviously, like, our systems are not built for liberation. They are, like, structurally flawed in many ways. It's like there's always going to be a reason from the system that we can't pass the really progressive policy. Yeah, but that's exactly why you're there, to fucking, like, yeah, fight. Yeah.
It's like, it's just like the...
Can't
you know,
do it today. I just can't.
That's the only way I could play it.
Wait,
from
that's
last
not on
episode.
The soundboard?
It's gone.
Okay. But the thing is like there's this idea that like people who get all of the policy details are the ones who are best positioned to make the change that completely discredit the role of activism in like pushing our city to move further to the left or like discredit people who have like legitimate policy concerns, which is why Day's fucking shirt was so good during 2020 of the cop car burning. This is a policy position because we need that. And it's all a form of theater. It's all a form of political theater. They're playing us. We're playing them. And like there are very few council members who could actually get in those seats and do it right.
Policyproposal.com. We might relaunch that. Just putting it out there.
Yeah. But no, what I want to bring up about Andrew Lewis, though, because have you ever seen that? There's like this page from like the CIA manual of like how to like disrupt organizations. And it's basically doing like a lot of stuff, just like fighting over like minute things of process. It just like use like the actual bureaucracy to jam up the works. And it's essentially like the same thing
that Andrew Lewis does, right? I mean, like what Chrissy was saying, it's like he's like a saboteur, you know, almost. So, I mean, who do the business interests like want? Who do the real estate people want? They need somebody who's going to gum up the works. So I don't know if like Kettle is that sophisticated yet. You know, he's untested. Like, you know, Andrew Lewis is like the proven saboteur, you know.
But also it's like Andrew got sold to us back in 2019 as like the better of two bad options because he was running against a cop. And then all of labor threw down behind him. They're like, all right, fuck it, I guess.
But
fuck
he
it,
was a ball. Prosecutor.
Right. I mean, but like, again, it's the false sense of like who's better. And then that clearly has panned out in the way it has panned out. And it feels like once again, we're in that very similar position, specifically within this district and this race, because they both suck. Bob Kettle's going to suck too. Andrew Lewis is going to suck.
The heat of 2020 was happening too. Like you'd go out into the streets and there would be all sorts of wild ass military hardware, like up on the sidewalks, like from like Renton and Bellevue and Linwood and like all over the place. We're like, damn, like when did like the Bellevue police like purchase tanks? Like what the fuck, you know?
Oh, and they look like soldiers. The Bellevue SWAT, they had like green fatigues. Oh, I'm sorry. They had green fatigues on. They looked like literally like soldiers in our streets. Like shooting guns at us.
It's wild. And all of that shit gets purchased by the SPD Foundation or like a police foundation from a particular city because not every small town has the budget to buy a tank or to test out like super sus new like technology and surveillance like technology. So the police foundation always underwrites that. And as I was saying previously, like the birth of the police foundation was because New York was having like a budgetary crisis. And one of the things that was at risk of getting cut was the, what is it called? The mounted police.
Because it's bullshit.
The mountain unit. Bullshit. It's nobody so needs dumb. It. But people were like, no, it's like part of the culture. We need to save it. And so then the police foundation was born. But now it's like, corporations like Microsoft, Amazon, Starbucks, all of which have sat on the board of the police foundation to influence our police, our the policing and surveillance of our cities without it being really in public oversight or going through like a public oversight process because none of that gets approved by the city council or like has to go through all of the other processes that our city budget has to go through.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the mounted police. It's like the Seattle Police Foundation, actually, they saved the mounted unit here. But the thing is, like, they saved it by covering the cost of purchasing the horses. But now they have to have stabling and they have to feed them. And they have to pay, like, three, like, horse techs.
Liberate the horses.
Yeah.
Horse masseuse.
No, what? SPD has a motherfucking pony. Why does SPD need a fucking pony?
Not a pony.
It's called. Oh they named gosh. It Little Sebastian after the pony
oh
on the fucking.
Oh my god!
Yeah. No. There's a cop pony called Little because they let some
you guys,
like they did a naming
to, where's
contest.
Where's PETA when you need them?
I know. Oh. You call
so,
them up.
Call
send them an
PETA.
Anonymous.
PETA. Like, yo.
Well, Justin, you were telling me when we're prepping for the show about the different tech. From police that's coming up. And you're telling me about that. How many dogs die under...
Oh, the hot and pop.
Yes.
What?
Okay, so there's a police technology that solves a very specific problem to police, which is like letting your dog die in a hot car over
that's
and over
sick.
Again. It is.
Wait, that's sickening.
It is.
That's sick.
You know how many... Okay.
This is going to make me cry, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. No, okay, so like 40% of police dog deaths annually, there's about two dozen annually, and almost half of them, in any given year, it's like 40% to like 60% die from heat exhaustion.
Oh my God.
This nationally.
Yeah, and part of it, it's not all in hot cars, because some of it is just like in their normal, because all these dogs, they're like long-haired dogs. They're like Belgian, what is it, Malinois?
German Shepherds,
and they have long hair, and then they have them like working in like the fucking deep south. Like this dog in Louisiana died because I mean they're in this like insanely like ridiculously like you know, hot weather, and like, and they're just running around for like hours and hours. But
where is PETA?
And yeah,
so what's the hot and pop?
The hot and pop. Okay, because there's this thing that is like a, it's like $1,500, and so they install it in the police cruiser. And if it gets too hot, it's basically like a thermometer that like attaches to the door mechanism and makes like the doors pop open. So hot, when it gets too hot,
it pops
and lets this dog, like this vicious dog that's trained to bite the fuck out of you, lets him out and lets him go run around. Like, yeah.
Wait, I thought that was going to go in a very different direction. I thought it just meant like that's how they euthanize the dog. That's what I thought the pop was.
Oh, no.
Glad it's that.
No, euthanize means a good death.
We don't have to go into that part.
Are you allowed to break the window of a cop car if you see their dog in it?
You should be able to, 100%. You should be able to normally. PETA. Whether or not you should be able to just...
PETA!
PETA, come on. Do something about these fucking cop dogs. Save them.
Can you tell us a little bit about the other tech that...
the bowler wrap? You want to talk about the bowler wrap?
We can talk about... I was actually going to bring up the proposed budget by Bruce.
Single technology, ideally every technology that the departments want to use, has to get reviewed by two sets of, like, quote-unquote community members. And they create these hundreds of pages of documents about each of the technologies. Mm. And funny enough, you know who used to chair the committee that was in charge of that? Was Bruce when he was on council.
Oh,
he was in charge of all of the surveillance technologies.
Oh, well, what a coincidence. Huh?
Yeah, it was. I used to have to staff that, and it was my least favorite thing because it's really hard to learn the process. It's very, very confusing. And so SPD will put in all these requests. So we'll SDOT for all these various types of technologies.
So his house got the spy gear.
Oh, yeah. He's popping out with spy kids left and right.
100%. Oh, Mayor Bruce. You know how much his
Mayor Bruce.
You know how much Mayor Bruce's bodyguards get paid? Fun facts hit time.
100K. 130.
Well, no. I mean, altogether, his bodyguard detail, I think it's like $1.7 million to protect the fucking mayor.
Of Seattle.
Yes. I think it's like six cops, but they're all like making buku like fucking overtime. Like,
and they're always with him.
Yeah, no, one is like one of the top paid employees of SPD. Like, he's got to be doing some kind of overtime fraud. I can't remember his name, but it's like number three on the highest paid cops. So $300,000 is one of Mayor Bruce's bodyguards.
How many does he have?
Like about six or seven, I think.
Wow.
Not very many. Huh?
I don't know.
Yeah, she had a lot because, like, after her address got revealed, so maybe it's still...
I mean, every mayor will have detail. It's just, I don't know the price tags for all of those, but it's always... I mean, that is just, like, a consistent thing across all of them.
Well, yeah. I did research, though, but I found in New Orleans, their total detail was, like $400,000 or something. And I'm like, that's literally like one of Bruce Mayer's, like...
I'm just like, what do...
Bruce Mayer.
Bruce Mayer.
What do they Brer think Moose. Is going to happen to these... Like, this is Seattle.
Is it like the Secret... Is it like the Secret Service where they have to like give their lives up for Bruce?
They have to take a bullet.
I'm being like, dead ass.
It's
serious.
Like Whitney Houston, the bodyguard.
Like, what level?
But
like,
who wants
what
to assassinate this fucking oaf? No, Mayor Bruce just wants everybody to like him and think he's cool. And he also wants to be able to say he's that guy. He brought Seattle back. Seattle was on the brink. He did it, you know, like.
It's his destiny.
Yeah. He's like the messiah. The oaf messiah.
To be an oaf, you have to be not the smartest, right?
I don't think so necessarily. Maybe I'm using an expansive definition of oaf.
Internet, what that means.
And the last tech you brought up, the Shotziger.
Shot spotted. The one that gave money to Mayor Brer Moose.
Well, what is that?
Oh, it's some dumb shit that they just like, they put these sensors up around. You know, I don't want to go off on a tangent again. Can I go off on a little tangent, tiny tangent?
It's your episode, Justin.
All right. It reminds me of some shit. Back to the CIA, because we were talking about the CIA. It reminds me of some shit that they did in Vietnam, they put all these like sensors everywhere to detect like the Vietnamese because they're fighting a guerrilla war. And so it was like the RAND group put up all these sensors everywhere to like get, you know, it's exactly the same thing. It's, you know, they're putting up all these sensors around like neighborhoods where the shootings are happening, which are all like, you know, black neighborhoods. And I mean, it goes back to like the whole, you know, theories that people were into, like the black intellectuals in like the 60s and 70s was all about like internal colony. You know, it's the same thing. It's like they're using these fucking colonial like counterinsurgency methods like against a domestic population. That's what it is.
So how exactly does it work though?
Oh, well, it just kind of like it detects shots and it uses like some kind of AI shit to try to differentiate between shots. And it's not always accurate, you know. It might trigger like a police response to a neighborhood that's false based on a false alarm. And they show up and they're just looking for people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that like an active shooting's happened and somebody's like, it's dark. Somebody has something in their hands. They're like, oh, that's a gun. Yeah. That's the kind of shit that, I mean, there's all sorts of risks, you know?
I mean, it means it's contextless, right? Like no one's calling in saying, hey, this is happening. They just hear a shot and that can mean anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And across the country, so he tried to pass ShotSpotter last year, right? And Solidarity Budget and a bunch of organizing with Dive SPD. Put on the town halls. We were doing a lot of public education because other cities that have had to deal with ShotSpotter have been fighting it for a very long time. Chicago, Detroit, there's other cities. And what they were saying or what they were telling us was it's leading to more predicative policing where exactly what you're saying, like they'll just hear a noise and then they're going to go out and look for someone. But the baseline thing that I want people to really understand is ShotSpotter is getting sold to us as something that can prevent gun violence. Mm. It's not preventing gun violence, right? It's still, sure. I mean, we know cops just respond after the fact, right? All this is doing is replicating more of that. It's not preventing gun violence at all. It's just allowing SPD to try and use quote unquote data to say that they're policing more effectively, which is not going to be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, almost nothing. I mean, I don't even say almost nothing. Like nothing, no like technological fixes for policing ever work. None of them. Like I can't think of a single one that had any really good result. Like going back to, because I mean, this is a long term. Like the original thing, CompStat. Y'all know what CompStat? I mean, it's just using statistics to like more effectively police, and they credited it with all this shit in New York City. But whenever like scientists went back and they reviewed the data, they were like, no, look, crime just fell everywhere. It didn't, you know, because they said, oh, crime fell like miraculously, like New York had all this crime, and then it just like, psh. But I mean, it fell at equal rates like everywhere. And so they even tested like the effect of CompStat, because a lot of you know, departments, they implemented that after. And so they had a nice, like, control. They had, like, places that implemented CompStat, places that didn't, and there was, like, no effect whatsoever. So they basically figured out that, like, CompStat doesn't do shit. But then, like, Seattle adopted its own. It's called CStat. You know, so just, like, every single technological innovation of policing just, like, doesn't do shit. Doesn't reduce police violence. If anything, probably increases it.
It just gives them more money.
This is more money. Yeah, more money, more gadgets, like more reasons to like extract more funds from like, I mean, because, you know,
actual
like,
public health programming.
Yeah,
like putting this technology somewhere that would help us, like healthcare or making buildings faster. I don't know.
But instead, we're having many cop cities start popping up
and training facilities.
Mm-hmm. And just like, well, there's just basically like an arsenal. It's very spread out too. Like in terms of like, you know, there are these huge transfers of military hardware, and that happened under Obama. I think that's the important thing to remember. It started really ramping up around like 2014. Is they just started fucking arming all these little podunk departments, and they're just like stashing all this equipment there, so that you know, back to what Chrissy was saying, like in 2020 when something goes down, there's a riot. They just out of nowhere, they bring in all these like hidden arms. Just they form up like Voltron in the spot, and then throw in because they can just instantly summon this huge like army of cops at any time, and that's scary. It's terrifying to see.
What were the craziest police warfare tech things we saw during 2020? There was that mega tank, I remember.
L-Rad?
Yeah, the
LRAD was a thing. I will never forget when we were in front of, we were right next to Cal Anderson, and we were on a side street, and all I remember is, I think I was standing next to y'all, SPD, there's a tank that's rolling down the street, and the cops are just hanging off of it with all of their like big-ass guns, and I was like, I'm holding PVC pipe, and I'm wearing a construction hat. And I have goggles. I have swimming goggles on. Yo!
I had my camera, I had my gas mask, and I was standing right. I could send y'all the pictures. I was standing right, like, looking at the cop. He was pointing like this, and I was, like, right here. Y'all can't see that on radio. But I was looking at him from the side, and I had a
They're stormtroopers.
Right. You know, it's there isn't a word for, like, non-lethal massacre, but I mean, that's what it was, like, right? It was, like, overwhelming force. Can we just call it a massacre, I guess, maybe, because... Nobody was killed, but, I mean, it was just an overwhelming force and violence used against an unarmed population. Like,
I mean, protesters have been killed over the last...
Yeah, I mean, there have. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, somebody died at our protest. They just, like, were revived. They died, like, three times and like, getting hit in the chest.
Cop City had someone die from police in Atlanta. Yeah, yeah, it's...
Okay, so I just Googled the The Seattle Police Foundation Board of Directors, as Googled today. Lynn Hauserman is the board chair.
She don't know her.
VP of Emergency Call Handling, Motorola Solutions.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there you go. That's just like people, they're trying to sell their radio shit. That's what it's this total fucking
holy shit
corruption. Yeah.
Here, I'll go fast.
Because they're like the walkie-talkies.
Well, yeah, when they also, they do like the radio, I think they have some kind of contract, and they have like a radio. It's not like the hand radios, it's like the whole system, I think, or like maybe even the computer dispatch.
So we're anti Hello Moto.
Wait, you guys. Okay, I'm going to read this list because it's very strange. So we have Lynn Hauserman, who is from Motorola Solutions, Sam Baker from Oles Morrison Rinker and Baker. I think that's a law.
Probably does cop lawsuits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carmen Best, retired police chief. Girl. Ted Buck from Frey Buck.
Cop lawyer.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah, Best is on the board now.
Yeah, like, she's on the board. Suzanne Burke, president
Susie
of the
Burke, Fremont.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Susie.
Our lord.
Susie.
Our landlord. Susie.
Mike Burns.
But I mean, I don't know. It's changed, obviously. I haven't seen
John
it
Carlson, talk show radio host.
Okay, he invented the three strikes law. What? He created it personally. We have the first Washington three, the first state three strikes was in Washington. He coined it. He's the architect of this whole evil thing that has caused like incalculable misery for so many people.
Isn't he the, didn't Crosscut hire him to be a columnist and they got a bunch of pushback because they're like, why did he give this like evil hyper right wing cop loving guy? He doesn't remember the John Carlson?
I don't know. Oh, maybe. When was this? John Carlson.
This was when
he's like a right wing
Crosscut still
guy.
Had columns. So it's
there's a lot the of Washington people on Policy this list Center. That say philanthropists and community activists. Like that is their title on the board's website, which is very strange.
So, totality of capitalism and divest SPD.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was that like put it all of that into sharp focus for me was like, we're out on the streets, we're fighting the city to defund SPD, but then we're like, hey, yo, actually, we also have to defund or divest from all of the police foundation and all of these motherfuckers that are connected to it.
Yeah.
And what are their specific interests in it? Mm. It's obviously to like hold up their private property interests.
Yeah.
It's to hold up their corporate interests. It's to protect their businesses and business as usual. It's to like, just to suppress like worker movements and like movements of like any uprising. And so I feel like when you like looked at the operation of like the Seattle Foundation, and we were sucked into like a stupid stakeholder advisory committee, which again is like the Seattle process, right? It's where like you see movements get sucked into processes that institutions force you into. And then if any of the social movement that's in the street gets diverted into a internal process, it loses the momentum. It loses the focus, and actually like it draws attention away from all of the important shit that was happening. Like we could have been like working more closely with like all of the people who were still marching every day, building with them, and making sure that there was like consistency afterwards. But like so much got sucked into that process that ended in nothing.
They got us. I mean, they, I really feel kind of embarrassed that like, I was like, man, we let them like stall us, and they won. They're good at this. I'm like, fuck, dude.
And maybe they, and to be honest, like, I think like, again, like people aren't always like so intentional in like being like deceitful or trying to like subvert movements or even have that like consciousness and like how they're moving. But like it happens regardless. Like there were good people at the Seattle Foundation. I think that they were really well intentioned, and like the way the Seattle Foundation was set up is there's donor directed giving and then there's foundation directed giving. And so like program officers with it that work for the Seattle Foundation have like specific initiatives, and that's like all the good work that they have on their website. They're like, look at all this great shit we're funding in the community. We're funding creative justice. We're doing all this shit. There's like black and brown kids smiling on the website.
And they then, say, like, we give and also like in terms of their foundation directed giving, that was a stuff that we kind of learned about, that is like, you know, we learned about the different types. They would actually say, well, okay, our foundation directed giving, which is like $10 million or something, they're like 50% of it goes to Black-led organizations. And but I mean, the vast bulk of what they actually do, which is the profit donor advice.
The profit generating portion too of like how the foundation can survive and operate and have staff as a business is the donor advised funds.
Because I mean, it's like they're basically like a, like it's a like Fidelity, a financial instrument. It's just like all those other ones are owned by like
Vanguard. And so they're holding on to all of these wealthy people's money in the community in a donor advised fund, which is a very specific financial tool, like as opposed to setting up a family foundation, which has some financial regulation around it. Like you have to spend down at least 5% of whatever's in a foundation annually. As like an IRS rule, there's no rules for donor advised funds. So you can actually just like hold your money there in perpetuity and spend it on like random shit, like travel for philanthropic purposes or going to galas or going out to dinner. Like having social capital as well and social influence comes along with having money that could be spent toward in philanthropic ways. And so that side of the organization was really hard, or the foundation was really hard to regulate, because one, the foundation needed that side of it in order to have its business operation. So it found it difficult to compete with the Fidelities and the Vanguards and the Charles Schwabs that didn't have any regulatory restrictions. And they're like, oh, if we say who you can and cannot give your money to, that will deter people from giving their money to us and look at all the great things that we do.
I think maybe, or a way we could have won, actually, in hindsight, to, or at least won something, is if we had just limited our goals in, like, the late, around, like, 2020, if we had just limited our demands to just focused on the police foundation at the time.
Yeah, right? And they diverted it by being like, no, we need to create a full-on anti-hate, anti-discrimination policy that would then be applicable to, like, any type of giving, because they did do a full audit of their giving and they were giving to hate groups. Like some donor advised fund money was going to like,
it was like Billy Graham Ministries. There was some like Christian group that
Israel,
but Ukraine, back to the totality of capitalism or racialized capitalism. I'm so sorry to go there, but like was something about the Divest SPD campaign being focused on philanthropy and how these foundations and like private, and how a foundation existed, the police foundation, that was able to accept private donations as well as foundation donations to support policing, also brought into focus the origins of philanthropy, which formed the end of, you know, the, or the beginning of the 19th century, whatever, the end of the 19th century. It was like, when was it? 1880, right?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of labor unrest at that time. There were people who were getting really, really rich during the Gilded Age and people who were getting really fucking poor.
Yeah.
And poor people were fighting back. And then all of a sudden, Andrew Carnegie and people who were really wealthy at that time were like, whoa, 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 whoa. We need to give these fuckers just enough.
Right.
We need to give them just enough or they're going to keep fucking fighting in the streets and fucking up our work. And there, and organized labor was also gaining strength. People were fighting back for like an 8-hour work day. Too,
like just the taxation and like.
Or a 10-hour work day, I think, you know, at that time. Yeah.
But just like the whole movement to like break up trust, to, you know, tax and build a welfare state that started like that burgeoning movement right there. And then like right now we're on the other end of that whole thing. We're at like the just stripping away of any social safety net. Well, and like, you know, I feel like Seattle is like the tip of the spear with all that, you know? It's exactly. Like Seattle is just so hyper-concentrated neoliberalism, just like a shot of it, you know?
Exactly. And no. So it's like, you have this thing that was built to protect wealth, and the story of that, the story of how like wealth accumulation was kind of legitimized and turned into philanthropy and supported by all of these new IRS rules, the ability to form a foundation, then the ability to form a nonprofit, and then for that to become the social safety net of our community where we outsource compassion. And in the same way as outsourcing compassion, we like divest from public infrastructure culturally and governmentally to support one another and invest in policing. So you have like this like symmetry between the systems of policing and why they exist and also the systems of wealth accumulation and how they exist and how they relate to one another. And I feel like that story is really important, and I and we probably should get better at telling it.
I mean, that's exactly why they stall out. You were just talking about like how the CIA goes in there and like diffuses leftist.
Yeah.
By like paying attention to process and delay. I mean, it's been like you were just saying from the 1800s, right? It's been hundreds of years of capitalist exploiters coming into the public sphere, pushing back against the quote unquote welfare state, right? Because they don't want to give up their money, right? And the public sphere is the only way we can legally redistribute their money, right? So the existence of nonprofits is just a way for them to tell us, hey, we know what's best for you. Like, we want to control our money, and we will look like we're faster than the government. Yeah. Like, we provide shit faster than the government. Pay no attention that we have made sure that the government runs that way.
And then they police how nonprofits spend their own money, how communities, and like the Seattle Foundation saying that 50% of their money goes to the Black community. Well, you, through reporting and through all of these other like paternalistic mechanisms, are policing how the Black community determines their own wellness and their own ideas of how they should be serving their own communities or any community of color for that matter. And so like this whole system of like the Ford Foundation, even like the Carnegie Foundation still existing, all of these like companies that have utilized the police for repression and repression of their workers are now also paying into the systems that are supposed to be providing public health and public good and then have oversight over them as well. It's just a very complicated system.
All right, welcome to the segment where Guy's not here, but we love you. But Justin's here, and Justin is going to help us gossip about SPD officers and the scandalous lives that they live in Seattle, Washington.
All right, let's do this.
Okay, let's Justin. Gossip. Start with your favorite find.
No, I just want to talk about this one guy. Okay. And like,
Justin said, shut the fuck up. I know what I want.
Okay, I got one. Okay, I like to talk about this guy because he's so interesting to me because he's not actually like a particularly bad cop. He's actually one of the quote unquote, well, I would say well, relatively.
Say it with your chest.
A relatively good cop.
You heard it here first, folks. Dive us SPD talking about good cops.
So would you say he's a good apple?
He's like a Biden Democrat. That's like the best you get at SPD is like, he's a Biden Democrat who writes novels. What? Who writes murder mystery novels.
No way.
One, his novel is called, his first one is called Griffin's Way, a Jim Churchill mystery.
All right. So he's a good cop. So what?
No, he's a good cop. I said it. I don't say, okay, relatively.
It's
good.
Okay. You won't he's get not, canceled.
We're kidding. I'm ACAB. I can't have an asterisk by my ACAB. Seth Dietrich, he has one blemish on his record, which I will tell you about now. It is he got written up in like the 2000s for using his fusing the police database on behalf of a woman he was trying to woo.
He's a romantic.
He is. Yeah,
he is. Stalker?
A romantic stalker.
No, he used it for her to like get out information about her ex who was like stalking her. That's what he said. Anyways. So that was his one blemish.
That happens often.
What? Actually. Cops accessing police data? No,
this is the second time I've heard a cop, quote unquote, helping his new love interest by using the database for an ex.
Well, I mean, it kind of plays into his...
should we be doing that?
His books. His books are all literally just...
This is the same guy.
Yeah, it's the same guy who writes books. This man Look it up on... you can look it up on Amazon. S.F. Dietrich.
No fucking way.
Look it up right now. One is called Blackmailer's Serenade. But it's a trilogy.
He's a nerd. He's a hopeless romantic... writing these novels, wooing these girls.
I know, that's why I said he's kind of good, because he's got something, even, you know, my hateful cop-hating heart. Look at this art, dude.
Wait, are we trying to get this guy a date?
Look at this fucking art, dude.
Art is really horrific.
We're gonna be funny.
I downloaded it. Oh man, I have it. We could read from it from my Amazon account. If you let me log into my Amazon, we're gonna read. It's boring as shit though. It's like the worst fucking book I've ever read.
Is it like
we have to describe
a preview?
Yeah, describe what it looks like.
Okay. Day, you want to describe it?
It just looks like
it's the shittiest drawing. I don't know that I can't. I hope he didn't pay somebody. I hope he did that himself.
Okay, what we're seeing on the cover is a man in
a high-rise apartment wearing a space needle view. Space needle view. That's why you know it's very high-risey, very fancy.
Frasier lives. It's that one.
There's a man that's could be white. Could be spicy white. It's ambiguous.
Eastern European.
Yeah, that's
wearing a black hoodie, black jeans, and standing over a blonde woman in a blue dress, looking distressed.
She looks very distressed. She's like in a fetal position.
I think she just got murdered, or he's about to murder her.
She looks like what's her name? Heidi Montage. Wait,
there's rose petals.
Yeah,
or
there's
something.
Rose petals on the bed.
That's a
I think it's a knife.
Yeah, yeah. The hooded like man is wearing a knife.
This is the first scene of the book, I think. And he has like, because he says he has like a ritual. Because he's like, I think his motivation is like a Satanist or something. Because that's something.
Wait, okay. So we're talking romantic SPD officer who writes murder mysteries is a Satanist and is using the.
When did he write this?
Let me read the one sentence description.
Wait. Please do. What year? Also the year.
What year?
What year is it?
What year? 2018, September 1st.
Okay.
This
is his first book.
Yeah. Jim Churchill didn't know he was looking for love. When he found it, she was wanted for murder. Oh. Jim must clear her name and find the real killer before it's too late.
Oh, my God.
Dude, this is like a cop fantasy.
It is.
Oh, my God.
I've read the first 10, because he's a cop.
Just no, the kid.
No, the first 10 pages or so. No, not the 10 books.
Oh, my God.
I read his, like...
Justin's half-brother.
Yeah, he makes me read my fucking books. No, okay, so the first part of the... Get this. Okay, the character in the book, it's a Marty Stu. You know what? The Marty Stu is like a character who stands in for, or it's originally like a Mary Sue. It's the equivalent of the Mary Sue. It's a character that stands in for like somebody, or, you know, people can imagine themselves like living out their fantasy.
Okay,
life.
Okay, yeah.
And so, yeah. And so this is just a fantasy of him because he's a cop who writes books about a cop who writes books. Because in the book, he's a detective. He's also like a high level, like
you
he has
can't
a
make
cool
this
job.
Shit up, y'all.
Like,
yeah. You just
they're
can't
all
make
like
this shit up.
They're all just like LARPing.
And he has a boat. Like in the story of him meeting, it's like he meets this woman and she's like a famous country singer or something. And he takes her out on his boat and just like sweeps her off her feet, and he has a much cooler job. And like, I think in real life he's just a regular like patrol sergeant or something. But
wait, this is part of a six-book series.
Oh no,
way.
He has six of them.
He's published six.
Wait,
books.
Read the titles. Read the titles. These are crazy.
The Matz Bay Murders.
Do he use his real name for those?
He uses like S.F. Dietrich, but his name's Seth Dietrich.
There's one that's Blackmailer Serenade.
Oh yeah, I mentioned that one.
And there's one that's called Ambush, a Jim Churchill mystery. Is it part of
the
Jim Churchill
last name is so funny to me. Like, go ahead.
A lot of cops love Winston.
I was going to say.
But his name, and also the characters, the original title was like the character's name, or like Griffith's Way or Griffin's Way or whatever. That's his first one. And that's like just his alter ego that he writes under.
Police officers are there?
Altogether, if we count parking enforcement, and
community safety officers.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like sworn officers, sworn officers, SPOG members. Okay. SPOG members, sergeants and regular sworn officers. There's maybe like 900, but total sworn, it's like 1,050. And then you add in civilian employees, it's up to like, there's like 1,600 people at SPD. It's a lot. Yeah. It's very top heavy. It's like, you know, it's almost like a third are like analysts and all kinds of like evidence handlers and just various civilian. I wanted to bring it back too, because, you know, kind of connect back to the thread that we had earlier. It was just like kind of like the origin of this group and of Divest SPD, and bring it like closer to now, and kind of like what the bridge is between what Chrissy's talking about and that sort of like phase of what we were doing. But yeah, you know, like I thought it was really eye-opening, like a lot of the work that, because I didn't know anything about that. I was learning about so much at the time too. You know, like I said, I didn't really know like nearly like almost nothing about policing, or, you know, not even a fraction of what I know now. But I also learned so much about the that whole world that Chrissy's in with the philanthropy and mm-hmm. like, and just like all these, you know, I didn't know there were all these groups of activists who, you know, it's like sort of the ideas that are in the revolution will not be funded, and that sort of like I you know, I learned about all these new movements. You know, we had that great teaching that Chrissy spoke at, mm-hmm. and we also had a professor come speak there about, you know, movement capture, mm-hmm. and that was really eye opening too. But like, to where that connects with where we're at today, and like sort of like what my goals and my you know, what I'm trying to achieve is like, it goes down to like this idea of hegemony, you know, and like how, like the importance of that is like the hegemony of different, these two core like interlocking ideas. One is neoliberalism, and then one's like sort of like a carceral approach to justice, or, you know, you could say just policing, prisons, incarceration. It's, you know, there's these like hegemonic ideas. About cultural hegemony, like Antonio Gramsci, that he articulated these ideas, and I think he was very like far-reaching, because at the time it's like there wasn't this modern nonprofit industrial complex. He was mainly talking about the intellectuals, intellectuals in like the media and academia, and then like sort of government propaganda as like being able, like forming this cultural hegemony. He kind of like foretold how sophisticated that this would become, and just so multifaceted. And like, I mean, you know, like think tanks, and you just have these massive media conglomerates, and then it like even.
So if you were explaining hegemony to like a 2-year-old.
Hegemony just means my, you know, a group of people's ideas dominate other people's.
Damn.
Like, I mean, and that group is like the ruling class, mm-hmm. and they dominate it through the media. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I mean, and that's something that I thought about a lot whenever we were having this, because, you know, we're thinking about how these different philanthropic organizations and these think tanks, like the Washington Policy Center, it's just like their hands are in everything. I mean, you know, they're funding all these people, like all the shittiest right-wing media goblins. They're funding the Jason Rances. They're funding the Brandy Cruises. You know, they're donating to elections. It's just like, we kind of broke through that hegemonic barrier containment field, you know, for a second. It's like the movement was just so much in the streets and couldn't be ignored. We broke through because I think in the early days you started seeing stuff out like the people, like the hegemonic forces, which I would say like the New York Times is like the definition of the hegemonic force. Like it's, you know, they put out a top 10 list of like books to read right now, you know, for the Black Lives Matter movement. They tried to turn in this brand thing, and they had, you know, like Robin DiAngelo, Ibram X. Kendi, you know, it's like they tried to, that's the hegemony trying to assert itself, but then it failed, you know, and they kind of had to just wait it out. And then, you know, as soon as the election was over, Biden beats Trump, they immediately pivoted. Like, I don't know if y'all saw that thing in The Intercept where Biden was like talking to all those black leaders and they were trying to say, well, we got to do something about police accounting. And they were like, he was just like, cool it, Jack. You know, like, I'm just, we you know, we got to get the heat off of this whole defund backlash, and we got to get these two guys into, you know, elected in Georgia. Then we're going to do all that stuff you want. Relax, you know, like. But yeah, I mean, and so what we're trying to do with Divest SPD is to create a counter force to that. And so something that, you know, I've always kind of struggled with is like the idea of, should we form a nonprofit? Should we start writing grants? I don't feel like we should. You know, I've been trying to like maintain that because I don't want us to get, you know, because I did kind of get wised up, you know, by working with Chrissy and, you know, learning all these, you know, tricks and learning about movement capture. I was like, no, I don't think, you know, so now I'm like, but it's still kind of a struggle too, you know? So the way we overcome that is like, a lot of the stuff we do is just, we don't really need any funding for it. We just need people. And, you know, we try to make it kind of like where everybody contributes just like a little bit to a task, and we kind of crowdsource things. And, you know, that's kind of a way we can overcome. And it's something we haven't, it's been like a dream for a long time, and something I'm trying to get done now is to just solicit. So, okay, like imagine you had like 100 volunteers, and basically you give, this is actually the project we're trying to get off the ground, is like you give each volunteer one cop's name. They go and they look up. We tell them like every single thing to do step by step. You can learn this in like one day. Less than one day, in like an hour, I could teach you like how to do all these steps. So you go through, and we build profiles of each cop's, like extensive profiles. You say you go to a website, you see every single thing this cop has done in detail, the links to the reports, you see little summaries, you see his use of force, you see just like all his stats, like, you know, you have links to news articles, just like one single profile, like a whole dossier. So we're gonna build up these dossiers. And we're just going to do it. We're going to try to get, like, you know, we could get through the entire department in a few months if we had, like, 100 volunteers, just everybody just doing one at a time, as many as they can do. You know, we assign you one, you do it, you upload it to WordPress, we edit it, we put it on the website. So that's kind of the big project going into next year. So,
all right, Justin, it's time for an activist class classic, Daddy, Zaddy, Father. We're basically... Since I'm introducing it, we're going to go by my rules. This is a ranking order of daddy, of zaddy, daddy, and father. So zaddy is like your highest echelon. Daddy is your middle. And father is like the lowest rating you can give somebody.
Okay.
Zaddy is the highest. father is the lowest.
Zaddy, daddy, father. Okay.
Zaddy, daddy.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
So you're going to have to pick between three people that we give you, and we're giving you three fictional cop characters.
Mm-hmm.
Your stack is Paul Blart, the mall cop, Ice Cube in a number of various cop movies.
Let's go with 21 Jump Street.
21 Jump Street. And your last one is Olivia Benson from SVU.
Just not making the cut is Rick Grimes from Walking Dead. Just missed it.
Damn,
or any of the dogs from Paw Patrol.
Okay, well, even though I hate to do it, Ice Cube's going to be the father because to punish him for writing like one of the greatest cop anthems of all times, anti-cop anthems, Fuck the Police. He wrote that and then he went and played a cop. Over many years. Yeah, over and over again. And like all he does is play a cop. And him and the other guy who wrote the other anthem, who also has Ice in his name, Ice-T, they both fucking suck. So fuck them.
Okay, so that's father. So now it's between Paul Blart and Olivia Benson for your zaddy and your daddy.
Okay, wait. To be fair, Ice Cube plays always a dumbass cop. It's almost like satirical.
Not doing that for satire.
So he's he's never getting money. Shit about cops.
Exactly. He's never like the serious movie. I'm a cop. Fuck. Criminals.
That doesn't matter. He's a comedy cop, but he still makes cops seem relatable. He makes the cops seem relatable.
I'm just saying Ice-T is a little worse because he plays serious cops.
He legitimizes.
Ice Cube plays like, oh, we're at Korean Jesus Church, and he plays right along.
Yeah.
Sure. They're both contributing to copaganda in different ways.
Yeah. Fair. But see, it kind of gave me ones I don't have a strong. I've never seen the other. I only have strong feelings about one, unfortunately.
All right, then I'm
gonna say Paul Blart, mall caps. He's zaddy. I don't have any reasons.
Who's your favorite cop of all time?
Who's my favorite cop of all time? I would say Veronica Mars.
I just want to do a gossip section with you on the scandalous lives of SPD officers.
Oh, they do some crimes. They do a lot of crimes.
Crime.
And they get away with
crime. You've never felt unsafe doing this work?
Whenever I started writing about that cop who threatened to murder his whole family, and then he has a whole house full of guns, but I think he's too lazy to drive all the way from Mount Vernon, I guess, is where he lives.
That's far.
Where Brandy lives?
Where? Eugene Schubeck. But no, he followed me on, I followed the Divest account on Instagram. And then I posted a picture of him, of his profile. And then my followers went to his profile and they found that all he follows is these Asian girl accounts.
Oh
He's
God.
One of the, yeah, yeah.
And then you.
Then me and then other cops. It's Asian, pretty teenage Asian girls.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, why not under Asians.
Why do they make it so easy?
What?
Why do the cops make it so easy to just...
That's a question but for no,
I found this happened. He followed me and I made him hide his account because somebody roasted him about the Asian girls accounts and he hid his account and then 2 weeks later he threatened to kill his whole family.
Oh my God.
Isn't that fucked up?
Yes.
So he's not a cop anymore.
No, he retired. He was the hostage negotiator. He shot a guy
he's
in the face.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So he's just living off of his pension.
Yeah, he threatened to, no, he sick. Has a house
I'm,
full
so
of guns,
sick.
People, and he's out on bail with a house full of fucking guns.
Oh my.
And so that's the one I'm scared
are
about.
You doing,
yes.
Are you doing a newsletter?
I have a Substack. I'm going to try to put more content on there, and I'm getting more people to help me with that. So we're going to expand that a little bit.
Where can they find you?
You can find me mainly on Twitter, where I'm posting all day. I never stop posting. You can also find me on Substack once a week and intermittently on Instagram at DivestSPD across all the channels and stuff. And please donate to our group. We got some big projects we want to fund, and also
Where do they donate?
They donate at Ko-Fi, ko-fi/divest, divestpd. I misspelled. Okay. You know, it's divest and then SPD. So
you, any chance you're on Mastodon?
No, people keep bugging me to get on Blue Sky. I'm sorry. Stop sending me these fucking codes. I'm not going to do it. I'm on too many.
And 5-star us, please. Spotify, Apple, Google.
Fuck the pigs.
And if you don't, we'll Mastodon you.